So what's next for the Jacksonville Electric Authority? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect, and I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. Just ahead this morning, JEA's Carrie Stewart is in studio, and she's taking your calls about the future of the local utility. Get on the line now with your questions. It's 549-2937. Then later, surfers splash out this weekend for the Void Live Pro-Am. We'll tell you about it, all of that and more, just ahead. But first this morning, local utility JEA is still moving ahead with plans to build a new downtown headquarters. This in spite of the fact that the utility is also soliciting bids to sell to a private company. So what's next for JEA? How will changes impact all the customers out there? Lots of questions. Carrie Stewart is Vice President and Chief Customer Officer at JEA, and she joins us now with more. Carrie, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. And if you have a question about the future of JEA, now's the time to connect with VP Carrie Stewart. Get on the line. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. Well, as I mentioned, there are renderings, by the way, that I need to plug that are up on our wjct.org website, showing the look of JEA's new downtown headquarters. That's moving ahead at the same time we're hearing that bids are underway for JEA to be sold. It's a little confusing. Why move to a new downtown headquarters and spend the money on that if you're planning to sell?
So I think, and I appreciate you having us in today, because we did want to talk about some of the confusion that is out there. We are currently undergoing strategic planning, and we have been for the last year. And part of that strategic planning is to explore other ways to do business. And one of those ways is to not be a government entity anymore. Mm-hmm. So that leads to terms like privatization, JEA is for sale, recapitalization is a term that we've been using. But what we've done is put out an intent to negotiate, not an RFP, not a for sale sign, but to say to the marketplace, what do you think is the value of JEA if we were a non-government entity and you were to invest and turn us into a non-government entity? And with that, there are a set of table stakes that went along with that that said very clearly to the market, only interested parties that are willing to do a set of certain criteria need respond. And one of those criteria was to maintain a presence in downtown Jacksonville. And that is because, as you know, and you've already stated, we've selected a building and development partner, Ryan Companies, to build a new facility in downtown Jacksonville. And what we do have with them is an out clause. So if the board of directors, based on information they receive back from the marketplace, is that JEA really needs to take a different direction to stay government-owned and to keep moving forward in a direction of shrinking as a utility, then we have a right to exit our contract with Ryan Companies. But they are moving forward so that the development plans do not miss a beat.
Carrie Stewart is in studio. She's Vice President and Chief Customer Officer at JEA. We will go to your calls and questions for her in a moment. It's 549-2937 to join us. Okay, on June 4th, your CEO, Aaron Zahn, appeared on this program, and I asked him several times if it was true that the utility was planning to pivot to possibly selling to a private entity like Florida Power and Light or another investor-owned utility. Here's what he said.
That's the absolute wrong question. The right question is, how does JEA remain relevant to its customer?
Why is it the wrong question?
Because if you don't have a business that remains relevant to your customer, then it doesn't matter what the structure is.
Okay. It was the right question. A few weeks later, we learned that JEA is, in fact, moving in this direction. What's your response to customers out there who have resoundingly said they don't want this utility sold? It's not a popular idea. And also, why the rush to sell? Is the utility really in that bad of a shape that you would need to do this?
So we've not said that the utility is going to be going out of business in this year or the next couple of years. We find ourselves in a period of strategic planning, as I said, to look forward to the next 10 years for this utility to remain relevant to its customers. And the customer and the community at large are at the center of this strategic planning. And so while the term selling JEA may not be popular, that is not at all what we're doing. We're exploring other business models. And right now, our board believes and voted in July, this was a month after you met with Aaron here in the studio, that they wanted to ask the marketplace, what is the value of JEA currently? And if we were unconstrained by the constraints that being a government entity have on us, what could the value to this community really be? Could we unlock more value to the folks that have been investing in this utility for the last 125 years?
Wouldn't it increase rates and result in layoffs at the company, though? Those are the arguments that have been put forth for those who would like you not to sell it.
So what we believe, and by we, I mean the board and the senior leadership team and a good portion of JEA employees, what we know is that if we don't choose to recapitalize or to become a non-government entity, that is going to happen. We will shrink. Our operating costs continue to go up. Our revenue continues to go down. And the technologies that are disrupting us only continue to accelerate and advance in their ability to do so. So if not now or the next 3 or 5 years, all of those forces will come to bear and we will have to shrink and there would be layoffs and we would have to raise rates.
You're saying that would happen either way.
We're saying that would happen if we had to shrink. Mm-hmm. What we're saying is we're exploring opportunities to not have to go down that path of shrinking our workforce or raising rates or reducing our contribution to the city and this community.
Lots of calls coming in now for Carrie Stewart of JEA. We'll go to them in a moment. It's 549-2937. The mayor's office has come under criticism for the perception that he and his top staffers are behind this push. He installed Aaron Zahn on the board. He threw some people off the JEA board in his first term as mayor, along with some other boards and commissions. The perception is that Mr. Zahn was elevated, perhaps because of his loyalty to this mayor and his willingness to go down this path. What's your response to those out there who don't like what they're seeing out of City Hall? And of course, you were the former chief of staff to this mayor and left to take a job at JEA. And so you have a really informed perspective on this, I would think, more than many other people. What about that concern?
Well, I appreciate the concern, and I've had a front row seat to both the mayor's office prior to my joining JEA and being at JEA now for just a little over 2 years. And any time a community grapples with a large issue like what to do with its government-owned utility, conspiracy theories will abound. I don't want to comment on anything about anything that's going on with the mayor's office right now. I know that my time spent there, the mayor was thoughtful about wanting to do things his way, and I think every mayor has that prerogative. As to Aaron coming on the board and then becoming CEO, it may have looked awkward and abnormal from outside, but inside, and again, with a front row seat watching this happen, it was a very natural evolution and an open process. The board did a nationwide search. They narrowed it down to candidates, some of them that had more utility experience than Aaron had.
They all did, though, didn't they? All, and including your internal candidate, Melissa Dykes.
Melissa Dykes was not a candidate, and I think that's something that gets missed.
She was never officially a candidate.
She was never officially a candidate.
What about the perception, though, that he was elevated over more qualified utility leaders for this purpose, perhaps, so that he could enact the mayor's agenda of privatization?
I don't want to speak on behalf of the board, but I did watch all of the board deliberations, and anyone that wants to watch them, they are posted online at jea.com. But the board did a deliberate, thoughtful process. They interviewed each of the candidates individually, and then they interviewed them publicly. And if anyone cares to go back and watch to see how the candidates stack up against each other, the choice was really clear to the board that day and to anyone that was sitting in the audience or watching that Aaron had the vision that was going to lead JEA down the path that the board wanted to take it. It was the board's decision.
And let me ask you before we go to the calls, other cities around the country have gotten fed up with their private utilities and are moving to go back to public utilities. That's been pointed out to the leadership at JEA recently, too. Why, once you make this decision, you can't go back. And so what about the fears people have that if we go private with our electric service and potentially the other services, that we would be killing the goose that laid the golden egg, as people have said, since JEA gives a hefty annual contribution to the city of Jacksonville? The city would get an initial cash windfall that the mayor has said could make us debt-free, but debt would certainly pile up again over time. Is this a short-sighted approach to improving the city's bottom line?
Well, the board doesn't believe so. That's why we're working on a 10-year strategic plan, not a one-year cash windfall plan for the city of Jacksonville. This is looking at making this utility, this community's utility, the customers of this community's utility, relevant for the next decade and beyond. And yes, some communities are looking at taking back private utilities to being municipally owned, but I would support the notion and the facts that there are other utilities just like JEA in the same place as JEA that are looking out to the future. And given their individual constraints and regulatory environment in whatever state or city that they are in, it's a choice for those utilities and the communities that they serve.
All right, let's go to some calls now for Carrie Stewart of JEA. What are your thoughts and comments? It's 549-2937. Ann is on the north side. Hi, Ann. Good morning.
Good morning. You stole my line with the golden goose. I'm very concerned that it is clear where there's no point in looking at what the value of JEA is if we don't intend to sell it. If we don't intend to sell it, then there's no point. If we are really thinking about the constraints that the representative keeps talking about, the fact is those restraints would exist for whether it's public or private. We're going to lose employees one way or the other unless the private contractor is a lot smarter than the people we have working right now. The same things are going to happen in the future, and the same problems are going to occur, and we still will get a value from keeping it under our public ownership. I don't believe that there is any point in killing that golden goose and serving it up for one-time Sunday dinner, even for the mayor, if we're not going to think about the future. There's no point in it. That's all.
Thank you, Ann. A poll that was recently conducted on this, I think it was St. Pete polls, showed that overwhelmingly the public doesn't want JEA sold. It would have to go to a referendum. What's the utility strategy in dealing with that, considering that this is an unpopular idea, Carrie, with the public?
Ann, thank you so much for your concerns. And I want to thank you and everyone that's on the line today and that has taken an interest in this topic. We have over 475,000 energy customers in our service territory. And we have a lot of customers that aren't paying attention as closely right now as callers like Ann. And so what we would ask is to be patient and watch what happens as we go through this third scenario. Let's see what the market says back to us. Let's get those questions answered. Let's get those perceptions either removed or validated for, again, callers like Ann and certainly other callers that will be on the line. Mm-hmm. We know that for a certain part of our community and our customer base, this seems unpopular to them, and we understand it. We get it, and we just ask that you keep paying attention. Go out to JEA.com, take a look at what we are doing, what we're actually doing, and stay tuned. There will be a referendum, so everyone will have a chance to weigh in if it gets to that point, and it may not even get to that point. So please continue to keep watching and continue to ask questions.
CJ in Mandarin. Hi, CJ. What are your questions? Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I just want to know a little bit more about the internal deliberative process about making the decision to consider yourself for sale. And also, I want to know what role the mayor's office had and what you have to say about the perception that part of the sale is to allow Mr. Mayor Lenny Curry to have a surplus and use it as a springboard to run for governor and obviously make a lot of people rich in the inner circle. I just want to make sure that the Sunshine Law is being complied to. I mean, my view is, as far as the referendum is concerned, I'm going to vote no on the sale, and I implore all the citizens to vote no. But I appreciate the it's good to have this conversation because we need to talk about the future of JEA and some of the ways that it can pivot to things like renewable energy like solar, but also other lines of business like municipal broadband, things like that. So thank you so much.
Thank you, CJ. Carrie.
CJ, thank you for the call and thank you for your concerns. There was a lot packed into that call, so let's start from the beginning. The deliberative process that is going on internally has been going on for well over a year. And I would invite CJ and any other caller to, again, go to the website, download the board meetings, and watch them. And you can watch the evolution of the process. We've gone through a scenario-based strategic planning process. That means we look at different scenarios. What if we don't do anything? If we don't invest in solar and renewable energies, if we don't look at alternative sources of water for our community, what if we don't accept, embrace, and deploy innovation? So that's scenario number one. Scenario number two is, what would we do if given we stay a government entity, how would we react to that same set of criteria? And that really is shrink the business. There would be layoffs to come. We would have to raise rates. And again, not tomorrow, not next year. It is not if, it is when we would have to do that. So the third scenario is to say, let's have a public conversation and ask the marketplace to tell us if we were not constrained with the same constraints. I keep using that word too much, with the constraints that keep us from doing the types of investments and partnerships that we would like to do because we are a government entity, what that might look like. We don't know the answer to that yet. There are six possible scenarios that could come back from that, and only one of them includes selling to an investor-owned utility.
Okay. Speaking of that and the marketplace, as you mentioned, we're seeing more FP&L advertising in our area on TV, Florida Power & Light. The CEO of Florida Power & Light has said, yes, we're interested in buying JEA. So is the market there for FP&L or another player to come in, buy JEA, and we will all then be getting our power from them rather than the public utility, is has been the case for so long.
So let's talk about the advertising first. And I think this question always makes me smile because we put a lot of community engagement and education out on the airwaves too. So I hope you're seeing our commercials as well. Mm-hmm. Our service territories overlap. So from South Georgia to almost Central Florida, our media coverage overlaps with FPL's media coverage territory. So it's just like if you buy a new car and you get a Ford, you start to see Fords everywhere you look. And I think because people are paying attention to what's going on with JEA right now, they are hyper aware that FPL is advertising in our service territory, but they have been for years. And it's been a question, again, that the board always asks about, employees asks about, our service territories overlap. It's really that simple. Mr. Szilagyi was very open with the St. Johns County Chamber last week, and he's been very vocal in other channels that FPL has an interest. I can't speak to their interest. We do believe there is a market for companies, firms, that want to invest in a very well-run utility, and or we wouldn't be doing this. We wouldn't have put out a set of stakes that said, only if you're interested in JEA and you can guarantee to this community that at a minimum, you're going to take care of our customers, you're going to take care of our employees, you're going to take care of the community as a whole, you're going to commit to downtown. Do you even respond to our ITN. And mm-hmm. we hope we will get lots of responses from a multitude of companies and firms that tell us, yes, you have that value. And if we could unlock that value with an investment, we'd like to be a part of that growth.
All right. Lots of calls for Carrie Stewart of JEA now. Bruce is in Nassau County. Hi, Bruce. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I think it's very prudent to always look at all your options as a business. And since this is a complex issue, I'm the only address point, and that is the issue of layoffs. Other CEOs have been faced with similar challenges because of economic conditions, downturns, et cetera. And JEA has a 5% attrition rate, which means 5% of the workforce leaves every year, typically through retirements. And other executives have used right-sizing through attrition rather than layoffs as a way to get the right number of people in the workforce without having to be so disruptive. I was just curious as to what your thoughts were on that approach.
All right. Thanks, Bruce.
Bruce, thank you for your call, and you are correct. Past CEOs have addressed downturns in the economy or issues with JEA, whether it's fuel rates or, fewer customers coming online. Whatever the issues have been in the past, CEOs have addressed them through either voluntary attrition and as a way of thinning the workforce, shifting to variable labor for a labor answer. They have raised rates. They have borrowed money to keep the utility running in the way that we have all expected it to keep running. So we've run out of traditional ways to react to these changes in the marketplace. And that's all we're saying. So future layoffs would be handled in accordance with civil service and union contracts. Mm-hmm. And so it likely would be some sort of using attrition as the leader to be the way we would handle layoffs, but all of that would be handled in accordance with union contracts and civil service.
There are so many other folks waiting on hold, but before I go back to them, the general tone of the emails coming in as well is sounding on this narrative that some folks out there believe that the leadership at JEA, the CEO and the board, not you, Carrie, are over-dramatizing the financial challenges you're facing so as to justify a sale, that this is being done to enact a mayoral agenda, and that you now are in the unenviable position of having to come and sell this to the public. It's an uncomfortable question to ask you, but, you know, that's the perception.
Melissa, we appreciate the perception, and we get asked this frequently. Believe it or not, our employees ask all of us as a senior leadership team. They ask Aaron directly to his face. We get that there is a perception that this is out there. What I can tell you, though, is that we have thoughtfully, methodically, and in a transparent manner worked with our partner, McKinsey, to come up with these scenarios. And we get pointed out to us frequently, and as frequently as this week on social media and in other channels, that our projections seem to look different in different areas. Well, the audiences are asking different questions. When we give a presentation to bond rating agencies, which is where Aaron is today, they're asking the question, are you going to be able to pay your bills? Are you going to be able to pay off your debt that you have assumed for these bonds? So the bond rating agencies ask a very specific question. The Public Service Commission, on the other hand, who only governs us in very small areas, asks us the question, prove to us that you will have enough generation capacity to serve all of your customers using the highest peak day of the year as a measure. So they're asking a different question. And what our board was asking and has asked is, what would happen if we were disrupted 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now? What if it was accelerated? What if if the adoption of solar energy and rooftop solar happened faster? What if a technology that we don't even know of disrupted our water or our energy side of the house?
And by the way, just to jump in, I meant to ask you this earlier. If JEA is looking to privatize, who would take over water and sewer? If Florida Power and Light was only interested in the energy piece, what happens to water and sewer? Many listeners have asked to clarify that over the months. Can you explain a little bit how that, some of the scenarios that you're looking at?
So we're asking the market to tell us what those scenarios are. And we have said, again, very clearly that we want you as an interested investor to make sure that upfront you take care of the customers, the employees, and the community as a whole. If you do those three things, we'll entertain talking to you about what that might look like. We believe our utility is valuable as a whole. We are a vertically integrated water and energy utility. We also sell a little gas here and there. We're a wastewater utility as well. We are moving headlong into utility-grade solar. We are looking at alternative sources of water. We're not taking our foot off the gas on either side of the house. And we think that is part of what makes this utility so valuable.
And would a Florida Power and Light buy the whole thing? Would they assume control of the water and sewer pieces of the house?
I think we keep coming back to Florida Power and Light.
Or any private player, yeah.
Any private company. I mean, it could be a technology company. And people have scoffed at that, right? That a technology company might be interested in investing in a utility. These are the exact companies that are actually interrupting our business. Right. So Tesla is building bigger, stronger, cheaper batteries and backup storage. Companies like Amazon and Amazon Web Services are working on the other side of the meter, direct to consumer. We have lots of companies that are technology based, but have large sums of cash that they're looking to invest. And so we see it as a retirement funds, pension funds, other investment, other investment funds that might be interested. We also see potentially an IPO where our customers actually have the chance to invest in whatever JEA becomes. So there are a multitude of ways to recapitalize, which is why that word is used. It's not trying to be cute. It's just a multitude of ways that JEA could be invested in so that we become the right utility for our customers and community for the long term.
Let's go to Jessica. She's downtown. Jessica, good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, go ahead.
So I have two questions. One is about the share of power that JEA committed to purchase from Plant Vogtle. And now that nuclear plant is in billions of dollars of cost overruns. I know at one point Mr. Zahn was trying to get you guys out of that contract, but how much is that decision negatively impacting JEA's financial bottom line? And then also, am I understanding correctly that right now JEA's general payment to the city can go pretty much anywhere the city at its discretion decides to put it, whereas if JEA were sold or privatized, that new private entity would have to actually pay taxes on the property that it takes up, and that money would be earmarked for schools, and, you know, would that represent a windfall in cash for the public schools that desperately need it here?
Yeah,
and I'll
okay.
take my answers off the air.
Two questions there, one about where tax dollars would go, maybe toward the school system. That's come up a lot. And then also the nuclear question. We're getting tweets about that too, Carrie. People wondering if ratepayers would be on the hook for the Turkey Point nuclear plant in addition to the Plant Vogtle operation in Georgia.
So again, Jessica, thank you for the questions and for everyone that is tweeting or sending in questions. Plant Vogtle is something that I can't talk much about because we are actively litigating the Plant Vogtle situation. It is an issue for the ratepayers and for this community. The cost overruns at Plant Vogtle have negatively impacted at least our future outlook, which is why Aaron and our board have taken a strong position with the state of Georgia and the folks that are invested. But right now, we are hoping for an amicable end to that situation, and until we know more about it, I can't speak much more to that. But we do agree that it is something that negatively impacts or could potentially negatively impact ratepayers, which is why we're taking the actions that we are.
Okay. Lots of emails coming into the show. Here's one from Robert. There's lots of emails, but Carrie, I'm sure it's no surprise to you. They all have the same general tone. Here's what he writes. The fact is that we, the people of Jacksonville, do not want this. A public utility has a duty to the people of the area it serves. A private utility only has a duty to profit from the people it serves. Why would the board consider the utility for a fraction of its worth? And so that's really the tone of our feedback we're getting from folks. As you said, you're encouraging people to engage on this, and it could go to a referendum for the voters. Your final thoughts about that?
My final thoughts about this is again, thank you so much to you, Melissa, for having us, and to your listeners for their engagement. I would ask that they stay engaged. That is going to be our call to action over the next 6 months. Pay attention. Stay engaged. We're going to be transparent. We're going to be deliberate. All of this will be done in the sunshine. All of this will be done out loud, if you will. So pay attention. And if you want more information, there is plenty of it at jea.com/pathforward. And there's lots of information, including meeting minutes, meeting videos, frequently asked questions, and all types of media that have been writing about this. We will be linking to the website as well. So jea.com/pathforward. Please stay engaged.
And thank you for engaging with us. We appreciate you coming.
Thank you, Melissa.
She's Carrie Stewart, Vice President and Chief Customer Officer at JEA. And up next, Surf's Up will preview the Void Pro-Am at Jack's Beach Pier this weekend. Don't go away.
Find out how the long-distance hiking trails in Europe often include lodging that you may not want to leave.
You will be cooked some of the best comfort food of your entire life.
Hear what's new in Athens.
Why is Greece exciting now? Because a lot of younger people decided to open their own businesses.
And what makes a garden really special?
It's a classical concerto of botany.
On the next Travel with Rick Steves.
Saturday morning at 7 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Lindsay Kilbride, host of WJCT's podcast, What It's Like. It starts with some of the best conversations recorded in Jacksonville by StoryCorps.
I remember being on the school bus and passing by and seeing you outside. You were under the addiction at the time.
And then I go deeper into the story.
How do you cope with the guilt you still feel? How do you cope with that?
Subscribe to What It's Like from WJCT wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to Pop-Up Country on 89.9 HD4 and explore country, folk, bluegrass, and blues by the musicians who created it as we get ready for Ken Burns' latest documentary, Country Music, coming to WJCT-TV in September.
Welcome back. Well, Surf's Up this weekend in Jacks Beach for the Void Pro-Am. The community surfing contest is happening bright and early Saturday morning at the Jacksonville Beach Pier. Here with a preview, Void editor Matt Shaw, Void President, founding partner Ty Wallace, and pro surfer Kayla Durden shall be competing. Hey, everybody. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Kayla, in a moment, I'm going to ask you all about your talent. You were selected as best surfer in town by Void readers. But let's start with you, Ty. This is the Void Pro-Am. It was actually rescheduled from its original date because the surf just wasn't right. but you're going ahead this Saturday. Tell us about it.
Yes, we're excited. The cancellations, postponement with surf, it's always hard to forecast. But yeah, we're going moving forward this weekend. We have luckily some tropical activity. It's been really a long, flat summer. But we're moving forward, and we got forecasted some wind swell, some fun 2 to 3 foot potentially plus on Sunday. So always fun to get that going and know that we're going to have some waves in the forecast.
And Matt, this is a great event at the beaches, whether you surf or not. You just are encouraging everyone to come out and enjoy it, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a unique, kind of a distinctive thing that we have as a large, you know, major U.S. city. You can probably count on your hand, on one hand, the amount of cities that actually have, you know, surf culture, and ours is vibrant and thriving. And, you know, you think of places like San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, maybe like on the East Coast, New York, but we're the only one that's like a big city that also has this thriving surf culture. So it's pretty cool to see, and, you know, we invite everyone to come out
and celebrate
and witness it. Yeah.
Kayla, you're a 26-year-old professional surfer from Jacks Beach. You've been competing since the age of 5.
Mm-hmm. Learned at 5.
You competing. Learned at 5. Yeah. Okay. You are competing all over the world. What do you love about surfing?
I think I love that. I mean, I love like what he said about the community and the culture, because I feel like Jacksonville is such an inviting culture, and the community is so tight that when I travel, so many of my friends are always like watching and texting me. And it's really cool to be in Japan and have friends from here texting me like, hey, I saw your heat, or, you know, just kind of that culture. I know it's here. It's really fun to, you know, to go and travel, but still have this community to come home to.
When you're out there on the board and you are on a wave, what's that like?
I mean, it's probably, you know, it's kind of why I fell in love with surfing. Is the first time I learned how to surf when I was 5. It's been kind of that feeling. I feel like we're always chasing of, you know, it's really short. I mean, most of the waves here are 5 seconds, but you're always chasing like that next 5 seconds, or that next 10. And it's pretty exciting. You never know. Surfing's always different, always changing. And that's what keeps it so fun.
That's the excitement of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of the unpredictability of it.
Always.
Is that how it is for you guys too? You both surf.
Absolutely. I mean, it taps right into creativity for me as well. And I think it is for everyone. It allows you to not really think about it too much, and you get, you just go with the moment, and the wave dictates that. And that is a beautiful thing for me. It's all about creativity.
Yeah. And there's so much more to it. Like besides those 5 seconds that you're up and riding on the board, you know, like the things we spend most of our time, you know, looking at forecasts or pulling up to the beach and looking at the waves and trying to figure out if it's going to be good or worth going out. And then you end up in a conversation in the parking lot talking to your friends. And there's so much more in between surf sessions that I think we all love about surfing, not just the actual.
We call it surf talk.
Yeah.
It's a whole community. It's a tribe all its own.
It really is. And I think like what Kayla was saying, you know, when you grow up in this community here and grow up surfing, and then you start traveling and see the rest of the world, like you can have a conversation with somebody in any place that you go about surfing. And oftentimes we run into people like from Northeast Florida or from especially the East Coast of the United States, because we have to get away to surf good waves.
Yeah, the culture is the same all over the world. That's true. And let me ask you guys as a follow-up. This is a contest. And I'm curious, how do you judge a surf contest? How do you judge it and pick the best? What are the criteria? How does this work?
That's a tough one. There's definitely, I mean, maybe Kayla, if you want to go into the regulation.
I mean, surfing is, it's so subjective, which is kind of what keeps surfing so unique, because it really is. You have a panel of 3 judges who are kind of scoring a ride anywhere from 1 to 10, 10 being the best. And once again, it really is, it's creativity. It's kind of what that judge is looking for. So it's what keeps it tough, but also keeps it so interesting.
It's kind of subjective though, isn't it? It's like the Oscars.
It's insanely objective.
It's very subjective, I mean, but there are things that are just, you know, unimpeachably like aesthetically beautiful about surfing. Like I think if you went in the middle of like Times Square and ran into somebody who'd never surfed and just showed them a picture of like a very good, like a stylish bottom turn where everything is in the right place, they'd be like, oh, that's, you know, that's a beautiful picture there. You know, like there's things that are just, you can look at surfing even if you've never seen it before, and it just looks
It's your style then.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Their style comes into it, but speed, power, flow, as they say.
That's it.
But you have to have a wave.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed for that on Saturday. Now, while we have you guys here, tell us a little bit more about the growth of Void. When you began, you really started the magazine as a way to celebrate the surf culture at the beaches, but it's more than that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Innately, that's how we started the whole pub is surf, skate, art was what we were really heavily interested in. And we primarily would focus on the beach. But, you know, as we grew and it grew quickly after that first year, our interests were much more diverse. And the thriving downtown, there was so many pockets of culture around here that we were also interested in. So all of that kind of developed over the ditch, as they say. And we really, you know, with Matt and all of our previous editors, everyone has a new spin on everything that we're doing. It brings that collaboration to a new level. And I think that's where it really has been a beautiful thing over the time.
And you want to encourage people to cross the ditch. This event and others, too.
Yeah, I think more and more you're finding that you don't have to dangle, you know, carrots in front of people to cross the ditch, because there is more and more, you know, I guess, cross-pollination between, you know, surf and skate culture at the beach, which, like, you know, permeates the rest of the city now. You know, like, I've got lots of friends in Riverside who surf and cross the ditch often, friends in Springfield and, you know, all over the place. And it's cool to see.
My husband's got 6 surfboards in the garage. 6. I don't know why you need 6, but I guess
you
do.
You never have enough.
That's right. That's what he says. So, Kayla, what's next for you as a surfer?
Well, this weekend I'll be competing in Void on Saturday, and then I compete on the World Qualifying Series, which is kind of a little segment of the World Surf League, and I have an event coming up next Wednesday, so I'll be driving up. As soon as this event ends, we'll have, you know, hopefully, and I'll be at the after party, make it to finals day, and then drive up Monday morning to go compete on the tour that I compete on.
Okay, so good luck to you.
Thank you.
With all of that said, you want everyone to come out this Saturday to Jack's Beach Pier. Tell us real quickly the agenda, guys.
So we're starting competition 8 a.m. on Saturday. Most likely go till around 4 or 5 p.m. both days, Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, it's 2 days.
It's a two-day event.
You.
Yeah, we have a lot of heats, including, which I always like to throw out there, is our twin fin challenge, I think you mentioned. But it's a kind of eclectic. It's our own Void surfboards that are our branded surfboards, a twin fin unique board. And we challenge our shortboard competitors and really everyone to come out and try it, and they actually surf our boards, so you don't really have that advantage of knowing, having those 6 boards in your garage, knowing which one to pick. we're forcing you to ride this one style, and it's very unique. And then the winner of that will actually take home a brand new Void twin fin surfboard. So
nice.
Those retail about $800-$900, so it's a great prize for the first place of that division. And then Sunday at 6 p.m. we're doing our award ceremony at Surf of the Bar in Jacksonville Beach. And it's all ages. We're going to have, again, our divisions range from 8 and under for little boys. We call them Groms, Manihuni division.
Grommets,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
All the way up to Masters 30-plus division. So we
and
have,
some cash prizes.
And some cash prizes, $3,500
right.
cash prize.
All right.
Yep, for all the pro divisions, so
okay.
Some cash to be won.
So there's some money on the line, everybody, at the Void Pro-Am. It kicks off Saturday morning at the Jack's Beach Pier and goes all weekend. Matt Shaw, Ty Wallace of Void, pro surfer Kayla Durden, have fun. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Melissa.
Have a great weekend.
Us. Bring one of those 6 boards to the beach.
Oh, yeah. He just might. I think they're mostly longboards. And in a moment, speaking of the weekend, our own Damian Lamar will have a taste of the weekend after this.
I love the colorful clothes she wears. And the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm backing up.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact 358-6327 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Hamtramck, Michigan is about to lose its General Motors plant, and with it, in a city that's already struggling, goes a whole lot more.
You know, it's the kind of loss that can sink a small city like ours.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, a post-GM life in Hamtramck, next time on Marketplace.
Today at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, tracing the course of the opioid epidemic, we speak with Washington Post investigative reporter Scott Higham about newly released federal data tracking the 76 billion opioid-based pain pills shipped to pharmacies over a seven-year period. The records come from a still unresolved lawsuit by states and cities against drug companies. Join us.
Today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Craig Newmark created the online marketplace Craigslist back in 1995. More than 5 billion classified ads have been posted there since. These days, he's focused on philanthropy, especially giving back to the news industry that suffered from the success of his namesake business. Craig Newmark's New Path, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, still looking for something fun to do this weekend. We've got a little taste of the weekend for you right now with our own 89.9 Taste Test host, Damian Lamar. Hey, Damian.
Good morning.
Your voice is like velvet on the airwaves. Let me just say that right now.
Thank you.
Everyone's just instantly more relaxed. Okay, so you're going to take us into the weekend with some ideas for us to mark our calendars and go do. Five good ones. What are you looking at? Yeah,
so of course, with the theme of Taste Test, the Taste of Jacksonville is going to be at the World Golf Village this weekend. It's going to be on Sunday, August 25th at the Hall of Fame at the World Golf Village. And a bunch of Jacksonville business connections are going to be there. And there's a beautiful spot to enjoy the day with local food vendors. They're going to have over 20 different food vendors and 50 local vendors from the area.
So buy one ticket. Eat your way through the whole city.
The whole taste. The taste of Jacksonville. So, yeah.
Okay. So that is Sunday from 1 to 7 at World Golf Village. River Ruckus is coming up, the big festival celebrating the St. John's River. This is a good excuse to go out to RAM, the Riverside Arts Market.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's, you know, one cool thing about the St. John's Riverkeeper is that they've partnered with RAM. They've done this several years, but it's a cool way to celebrate the family with two of the most important assets, the St. John's River and Riverside Arts Market. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be Saturday from 10 to 3.
And what all are they planning for that?
Tons of activities, activities for anybody that's interested in going green. Riverside Arts Market is just like one really cool place under the canopy of I-95 that everybody just goes out. You can bring your dogs.
Yeah.
There's tons of food vendors that are going to be out there, and then you'll get a chance to meet all the St. John's River Keepers.
Come on out for that. If you're planning to come out to RAM this Saturday, you have a special reason. It's the 2019 River Ruckus. Okay, let's go back to food. Hemming Park is having this Saturday the College Colors Food Truck Rally. Now, there are food trucks at Hemming a lot of the time, but what, are you going to collect them all in one big?
Yeah, there's about 13 or 14
cluster?
Trucks. Yep.
And
Friends of Hemming Park is partnering with Jack's Food Truck Court to kick off the college football season. So from 11 o'clock to 4 o'clock, they'll have live music. There's going to be a cash bar. Jack's best food trucks, and also the competition naming the biggest football super fan. So if you bring your best spirit gear, come out and get hyped in advance of that 7 o'clock cookoff.
Okay, the food truck culture around Hemming, as you know, has really taken off.
Yeah.
This is now some of the brick and mortar restaurants have grumbled a bit. But I understand that. What we've learned though is that we're big enough as a city now that we can handle it all.
Yeah, we can hold our own. One cool thing about downtown is like a lot of the businesses that are open during the week are they're closed on the weekend. So a lot of the reason that Friends of Hemming Park actually does these events is to attract some of those families. And this is also one other cool thing. It's Skyway Saturday. So
JTA has partnered with Friends of Hemming Park and MoCA, the library, and MOSH, who all have different types of activities. So you can actually jump on the Skyway and hop from place to place and experience some new exhibits at both MOSH and MoCA, as well as inside the library as
Great
well.
Great idea. Yeah. Take the Skyway this weekend. Okay. Two more things on Damien's radar. One is a presentation of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, yeah.
At Babs Lab.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the Cork Studios.
Very, very excited. It's called the Sherlock Holmes, The Strange Case of Alice Faulkner. And it's a unique radio play experience. If you ever wondered what it was like to experience live radio broadcast in the 30s, then you definitely don't want to miss this
mystery
drama.
They're going to reenact that.
Yeah, that right before.
So an old-timey live radio play.
Yes.
How fun.
Yeah, three opportunities to see that. Thursday, August 22nd at 7:30, Friday and Saturday at 8. And it's really kind of cool because there's Doyle's novel is presented by Orson Welles, and it was recorded by the Mercury Theater on the air back in September of 1938.
And that's at Babs Lab at the Cork Studios in Riverside. Last but not least, at Daly's Place on Saturday, it's Pentatonics, the world tour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I have plans, so I will not be able to make it. But everyone loves Pentatonics. They have mastered the art of covering so many different songs, and they do so very well in a cappella fashion. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Damien's Taste of the Weekend. And by the way, catch his show. It's in our After Hours block of music programming that you can catch every night and weekend. Taste Test host Damien Lamar. Always good to see you. Have fun this weekend.
Too. You too. Thanks so much, Melissa.
And that's our show. Taste Test, by the way, airs Saturdays and Tuesdays at 11 p.m. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. We value your feedback, so keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tomorrow, it's the biggest stories of the week with our Friday roundtable. That's tomorrow. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight, keep listening, as I said, for music. We will see you tomorrow.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.